Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with some of the world's biggest central banks announcing they will take coordinated action to stop the European debt crisis from tanking the global economy. The former chief economist for the US Senate Banking and Budget Committees and now the director of the Institute for New Economic Thinking, Robert Johnson, joins us. As Europe enters a critical 10-day period ending on December the 10th after the European Union summit, by which time the Italian Prime Minister has warned there will be no more room for error, we will discuss whether Europe can be saved from itself. Then Dan Kennedy, who writes a weekly column for The Guardian, joins us to discuss his latest article, Why Liberals Should Be Rooting for Romney, which argues that while Obama supporters hope for one of the many flawed Republican presidential candidates to get the nomination, they should be careful what they wish for. If the already ailing economy collapses and unemployment soars, then instead of a moderate, pragmatic, and results-oriented Romney, who is everything today's Republican Party is not, as a Gingrich or a Perry could get elected and America would lose. Then finally, George Lakoff joins us. He is the author of The Political Mind, Moral Politics, Don't Think Like an Elephant, and Whose Freedom? He argues that the next step for the Occupy movement is to occupy elections. Just as the Tea Party gained power, he feels the Occupy movement can change the nation by engaging in electoral politics because elections focus attention on public discourse, and so far the 99% versus the 1% has opened a national dialogue that has to be built upon. Joining us now is Robert Johnson, Executive Director of the Institute for New Economic Thinking and a Senior Fellow and Director of the Global Finance Project for the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. He recently served on the United Nations Commission of Experts on International Monetary Reform under the chairmanship of Joseph Stiglitz. Previously, Robert Johnson was a managing director at Soros Fund Management and was chief economist of the U.S. Senate Banking Committee and the Budget Committee. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Johnson.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And do you think that the world's large central banks that have launched this coordinated action aimed at shoring up the international financial system, that's the U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, and the central banks of the U.K., Canada, Japan, and Switzerland. Is that a sufficient firewall, do you think?
I think the central banks are actually operating in the midst of dysfunctional governments and dysfunctional financial system. Our financial regulatory system was revealed in 2008 to be a dreadful mess. And it is, at this juncture, so bad and so dysfunctional that something the size of the state of Nevada, which is about what Greece is not able to be, how would I say, restructured or resolved without bringing down the whole world. So the central bankers are responding to the fact that a year and a half ago, at the time of Dodd-Frank and its equivalent around the world, they didn't do the real work. And we're all in danger of suffering as a result.
But could we have, as what a number of economists I've spoken recently with Sheryl Schweniger and Dimitri Papadimitriou and a number of other economists as well, Tom Ferguson, all of whom have said that this so far has been too late, and that there could be another Lehman Brothers event if the Europeans don't get their hands around this.
I think that's right. I think there could be something of the scale of Lehman Brothers. But the interesting question right now is, why are the Germans and the French, 18 months after this started, not doing something to take the pressure off? And it feels to me like what's going on is that there's a very, very substantial elite energy that would like to crush the Spanish, the Italian, the Portuguese, and the Greek states, and what you might call eradicate the structure of social democracy that has existed there throughout the time of the Cold War. And the Germans know what to do. They're just choosing not to do it.
So some people have suggested there's a kind of a racial component to this, the North versus the South, the idea that the Northerners see themselves as thrifty and tax-paying, and they see the Southerners as being profligate and lazy. But my understanding is that all of the bailout money doesn't go to the people in Greece and Italy and Spain and Ireland and Portugal. It goes to the largely German and French banks who made these bad loans.
I think that's right. And I think that I don't want to say that necessarily the officials in finance ministries and central banks are what you might call friends of banking power. I think they're actually terrified of banks because they think they could unleash a Lehman-like episode if they don't pander to them. It's sort of like they're paying ransom on behalf of a hostage situation. And I think there may be, as you say, a racial component to it, but there's also a kind of structural component to it. Before the end of the Cold War, all of these European social democracies paid the equivalent of an insurance premium, meaning good living conditions, good wages, good benefits, problems if you had unemployment, because they didn't want to switch to communism. But they don't pay the insurance premium anymore because they don't fear the accident. Once the Cold War ended, there was no prospect of these people switching to the communist system. And so all the business and everybody else just want to squeeze out all those costs and all those social protections. And some argue that those will ultimately be squeezed out anyway because we're all driving towards Vietnamese, Indonesian, and Chinese labor and social conditions in the globalization arbitrage that's been going on for 20 years.
So then could this be another one of Naomi Klein's crisis capitalism events?
There's a shock doctrine in all of this, which is they use the stress
to break
the democratic process and impose a technocratic top-down solution, which essentially, to use Mansur Olson's old work, Logic of Collective Action, where the concentrated and powerful interests defeat the common interest.
So, in other words, this would be a way to undo the social democracies and the European safety net. And so it's not then, Rob Johnson, the question that Europe has the resources but not the capability. You're suggesting something far more cynical.
I don't know that it's cynical. I think it's self-interest. I think that there are a group of people in Europe who want to keep the pressure on. And they may ultimately blink because of the fears of banking crisis and propagation and disintegration of Europe, but they may blink, what you might call, at the last instant after they've wrung every last drop of water out of the Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, Irish, and even Belgian stones.
So that's what the next 10 days are going to be about then.
Well, I think we're reaching the climax in the sense that the system is either going to blow up or they're going to come up with a mechanism to conserve it, and they don't have a lot of time. I agree with the FT columnist Wolfgang Munchau that it's now a matter of days, not months.
So the notion that some of the other economists I mentioned had said, one suggested that all it would take was for the European Central Bank to buy up all of the European sovereign debt at 5%, and that would stop it in its tracks. Another suggested that made the analogy that in 2008, the Fed put up $29 trillion to stop the collapse from tanking the global economy. And by comparison, up until now, the Europeans have only put up a half a trillion in euros. And now they're talking about trying to shore up their fund only to the extent of about 1 trillion.
That's right. Their economy, the European continental, European Union, is of comparable size to the United States, and the scale and the extent to which Ben Bernanke went to clean up after the excesses of the U.S. financial system is orders of, like you said, 29 times what Europe has done so far. And I'm sad that the American people got put at risk to the extent they did by the Fed spending $29 trillion. How would I say, we're lucky things came back a little bit. If they had fallen off a cliff, that would have been one big bill to pay.
But if the Europeans don't get their act together, and if bold measures are not taken, surely that explains what happened at the White House earlier this week, where President Obama, I'm sure in private, was really butting heads with these European leaders. Because isn't his political fate tied to this? Because if the Eurozone tanks, then that will have terrible effect on follow-on with the global economy, not to mention the U.S. economy, and make 2012 the millstone of the economy around the president's neck even greater.
Well, you've got two dimensions here. Number one, Sarkozy, Merkel, and Obama are all up for re-election next year. And the slowdown of Europe would affect U.S. exports, though they're a relatively small proportion, but it would dampen growth. But more importantly, a freeze-up in the world banking system sends a synchronized credit shock all around the world, which is what we experienced at the time of Lehman Brothers. And all of these finance ministries and central banking officials have spent the last 2 or 3 years talking about the evils of debt and how they all have to consolidate. And, you know, we have super committees and so forth. What saved us from going over the waterfall last time was a fiscal stimulus program that pushed us out of the ditch in a crisis. Are they now willing to completely, what you might call, suspend the ideological mantras of the last 3 years and use fiscal policy around the world in a coordinated fashion, like they did after the London summit in 2008? Or are we just going to sit here and crash against the rocks? I think Obama's in real jeopardy right now if the Europeans don't bring this together. And I expect the Chinese and the Americans, before it's done, are going to blink and actually offer to put some money in alongside the Germans. And some of what happened was the Federal Reserve led the charge today on the dollar funding with the new swap lines, because the Americans are scared of what this game of chicken in Europe could portend for all of us.
And today's actions stem from that meeting. But you think it could get worse, and that the Chinese, who have already lowered restrictions on cash deposits, they're starting to pony up more money than they feel is prudent.
I think that they are seeing the slowdown around the world and the dangers of Europe, and they're actually taking prudent action by releasing some of their credit constrictions, because they fear a slowdown. But I think the emergency action that the major central banks took, led by the Federal Reserve, is testament to how fragile this situation is. I think the funding problems for European banks, particularly their dollar funding, was leading to the kind of rise in all kinds of risk indicators about bank default risk that we haven't seen since that period between Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers.
But Rob Johnson, at the end of the day, we're doing all we can from the outside, but on the inside is where it really counts, isn't it? With the ECB and the extent to which they're going to get real about building a real firewall and stopping the bleeding?
It's absolutely the case that without them in the lead, nothing can happen. The euro could break up, lots of banks could default, and it could propagate around the world. There's no question that risk is right before us now. But at some level, do the Germans want to wreck their own system, their export machine, their technology? You know, they sell luxury consumer durables, capital equipment all over the world. They don't have a stake in a world slump, nor the Scandinavians and other Northern Europeans, who are part of what you might call the core of Europe. So it is a bit surprising not to see more aggressive collective action on their part. But I think that is, as I mentioned earlier in this segment, attributable to these kind of what you might call pernicious or aggressive efforts to eradicate the social welfare state that sprung up during the Cold War years.
But surely the Germans realized that as being at the center of the euro has been extraordinarily beneficial for them in terms of their export economy.
It certainly has. Everybody talks about the profligate, you had mentioned earlier, the kind of racial dimension, the profligate Greeks and the profligate Spaniards and what have you. Well, Germany was selling elevators and equipment and automobiles. German citizens who thought now that all of these Southern European summer homes were part of the euro. You know, in the old days, if you bought a Spanish or Italian home and you were German, you had to take a loss every couple of years because they always depreciated their currencies. Well, now, if they were all in the euro, you could do you create a building boom and a buying boom emanating from Northern Europe, where they buy their summer homes like Americans buy, you know, Florida homes and or California homes. And I think we're in a place where the Germans were the beneficiaries of the boom, and they're like an insurance company. A lot of people in America always they joke that we don't have health insurance. We pay premiums so that if we have an accident, we have the right to sue and see if we're covered. Well, the Germans are like an insurance company that's trying to wiggle off the hook in a health insurance settlement because they signed up for Europe a while ago, and now they're trying to say, oh, no, we're not all guaranteeing each other, every man for himself. That's part of what drove the speculators crazy and why this frenzy is unfolded.
Well, also, isn't it true, Rob Johnson, that, for example, Spain, where, by the way, 45 out of 100 young Spaniards are out of work, they went through this housing bubble. There were more houses built in Spain than there were in France and Germany combined. May have something to do with what you were just telling us.
But French and German and British citizens were buying those homes. Those were not just homes for domestic consumption. They were domestic employment, domestic construction, domestic lending.
Right. And the Germans were keeping the interest rates low, right, which created the bubbles.
Yep.
What's good for Germany?
That's right. They were creating the, what you might call, perception that things weren't risky because everything was guaranteed together.
Right. So fair weather friends then, I take it.
That's what it feels like a little bit. And right. I think the idea that the whole world ought to, like, be put through the ringer now and democracy's destroyed to protect bad loan decisions by German and French banks is an interesting notion. I mean, they talk about this stuff called moral hazard.
Right.
Like, the only people that are imbued with moral hazard are finance ministry officials in Southern Europe that don't tax enough or they spend too much. But when bankers in the north make bad loan decisions, when creditors make mistakes, they put these democracies through the ringer and they destroy these societies rather than restructure the debt. And the combination of austerity and crushing political change is only one alternative that's available logically. Restructuring the debt could have happened preemptively a long time ago in Greece, in Portugal, in Ireland relating to the banking guarantees, and we didn't need to go through this, what you might call, challenge to the structure of civilization.
And just in closing, Rob Johnson, if at the end of the day, if the worst happens, not just here in terms of the follow-on and how it's going to affect our politics, it will lead to the rise of right-wing fascism in Europe, and we've seen that one before.
And because of the cultural differences, you know, people in America are conditioned in many respects to recognize and respect that we're all Americans, but that kind of cohesive fabric psychologically is not present in Europe, and as you say, the nationalistic anxieties and the right-wing polarity can be a very dangerous cocktail for the future of that civilization.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Rob Johnson.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Johnson, who's Executive Director of the Institute for New Economic Thinking and a Senior Fellow and Director of the Global Finance Project for the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. He recently served on the United Nations Commission of Experts on International Monetary Reform under the chairmanship of Joseph Stiglitz. Previously, Robert Johnson was a Managing Director of Soros Fund Management and was the chief economist of the U.S. Senate Banking Committee and the Budget Committee. Let's take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about whether or not the liberals in this country who would like to see one of the flawed candidates on the Republican side get the nomination should be careful of what they wish for.